For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. November 29th, we're continuing with what I'm calling our special analysis of the past several months of learning. So we've documented the how the destruction of Nov has led to the Bnei Yisrael where they are now. We've shown how we've seen the line of David and the line the Rus and Arpa. We've shown last week we spoke about the famines. And now we're going to tie a lot of this into Eliyahu HaNavi and Elisha HaNavi as well. Now, we know, as I mentioned a number of weeks ago in the introduction to this analysis, that the way that the destruction was going to come to the Bnei Yisrael was through a change in three areas. Eliyahu would be replaced by Elisha, and Achav would be replaced by Yehu, and Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, would be replaced by Hazael. We also mentioned that in the succession of the Nevi'im, Eliyahu was succeeded by Elisha, and Elisha should have been succeeded by Gehazi. In the end, Gehazi lost his chelik in Olam Haba, and instead it seems that Yonah is the next Navi, even though he doesn't seem to occupy the same level of leadership as Eliyahu and Elisha, but he seems to become the primary student of Elisha after Gehazi is gone. We also mentioned that we said we would also tie in Elisha's interesting request of Eliyahu, that when Eliyahu is going to leave Elisha, Elisha asks for Pishnayim Beruchacha. He wants double in the spirit of Eliyahu, which is understood to mean that of the open miracles that Eliyahu performed, that Elisha would perform double the open miracles. And Eliyahu tells him, he says, what you ask for is very difficult to give. If you see me being taken, then you'll get that. If not, you won't. So we never explained what that meant. If you see me being taken, what is the significance of seeing Eliyahu being taken? And in the end, Elisha does see Eliyahu being taken, and Eliyahu's aderes, his cloak, gets left behind. And Elisha takes that cloak, and that seems to be significant for the miracles that Elisha performs. Elisha does perform double the amount of miracles of Eliyahu. The way that it's counted in Chazal is Eliyahu performs 8 open miracles and Elisha performs 16. Some of them are obvious where the doubling is. For example, Eliyahu brings one person back to life and Elisha brings 2. We'll discuss later. We've seen so far Elisha bring back to life one person. We haven't seen the second person. We'll talk about that later. Not tonight. And also, we found Chazal themselves say that when they were going to the place where Eliyahu would be taken away, they have to cross the Yarden River, and Eliyahu strikes the Yarden with his aderes of his cloak, and the Yarden splits. And when Elisha's coming back, he does the same thing, and the Yarden splits. And Chazal say that was double the strength of Eliyahu, because when Eliyahu was crossing the Yarden, there were 2 tzaddikim. There was him and Elisha. When Elisha was coming back, he was by himself. So it took double the spiritual strength to split the Yarden for Elisha as it did for Eliyahu. So there you also see a double. It's not it's not 2 miracles, but it's 1 miracle that is double the level of the other one. So the other ones aren't as easy to pinpoint, but that's what we know from Chazal. In the way that the destruction is mentioned, and I've read this to you several times already, we're going to read it one more time. In Malachim Beis, I'm sorry, in Malachim Aleph, in Malachim Aleph, at the end of Perek Yud Tes, the end of chapter 19. This is, we talked last week how Eliyahu did not want to, he still held to his position that the Jews had sinned and that they were, that they really were undeserving of being saved from punishment. So Hashem tells him to make the three replacements that I told you. And then it says in Pasuk Yud Zayin, verse 17, whoever escapes the sword of Chazal will be killed by Yehu. Whoever escapes the sword of Yehu will be killed by Elisha. Now, it does not happen in the order that the Navi says it over here. In the previous pasuk, the previous two pasukim, it says that Eliyahu should anoint Chazal as king over Aram, and Yehu as king over the Yisrael, and Elisha ben Shaphat as the new Navi over Yisrael. The only one Elio actually does is he anoints Elisha. So the one that is mentioned last, Elio does himself. The other two Elio does not do, but rather they are his agents that do it. Elisha himself is the one who anoints Chazal to be king over Aram. And Yehu ben Nimshi is anointed by Yonah at the behest of Elisha. Elisha tells Yonah to do it. So it's not Eliyahu directly doing all three of these things. Eliyahu does one. His Talmud, his student, Elisha, does the other. And Yonah, who started as a Talmud of Eliyahu, but after Eliyahu leaves, he seems to be a Talmud now of Elisha, he also does one. But it's not in the order that it's stated over here. In the destruction as well, the destruction, the deaths that were caused by Elisha happened first. That's the 42 young people who were killed by Elisha, as we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Then comes the destruction of Yehu, when he kills out the whole house of Achab and many, many other people along with them. And finally, the destruction of Chazal happens when Yehu, we haven't really discussed it yet, we're going to get to it in a little bit, but when Yehu fails to properly serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then Chazal ends up attacking the Jewish people and a lot of destruction happens. So it's not in the order that says it over here. So it seems that whatever the order was supposed to be was disrupted. It was supposed to be in a certain order, and in the end it happened differently. The Mefarshim comment on this, but what it seems, at least it seems to me, is the most plausible explanation, and several of the Mefarshim say this, that the Jews ended up doing a little bit of tshuva. It didn't happen this way because the way that it's described over here would have been had there not been any tshuva. Had it been as the Jews were at this time when Hashem is speaking to Eliyahu, then the order would be Chazal would attack and would cause great destruction. Anybody who escaped from him would be destroyed by Yehu. Anybody who escaped from him would be destroyed by Elisha. But what does it mean anyway? Those who escape the sword of Chazal will be killed by Yehu. Those who escape the sword of Yehu will be killed by Elisha. If they escape, that means apparently they deserve to escape. What does it mean that there's some sort of happenstance over here? If you happen to, you won't be able to get away. If you get away from this, that one will kill you. Get away from that, that one will kill you. Then why do they get away? Is there any kind of hashkacha over here? Is there some sort of plan of who's escaping whom? So it seems that there's a progression over here, and that the truth is that being killed by Chazal and being killed by Yehu and being killed by Elisha are completely different things. That we know what Yehu destroys. Yehu destroys all the idolatry in Eretz Yisrael. He destroys Achav's family. He destroys anybody who's associated with Achav's family and creates a new world order in Eretz Yisrael with a great deal of destruction, all because Hashem told him to. But he does that. Elisha, we know he killed people who were empty people who were sinners, he killed them. Who does Chazal kill? That's not documented clearly in the Navi who he kills, it's just that he kills a lot of people when he attacks the Bnei Yisrael. But it seems that it is significant by which sword the person is being killed, that matters. If it would have happened in the order that it says it in the Navi, first Hazael's sword, then Yehu's sword, then Elisha's sword. So you're going from the non-Jewish foreign enemy to the Jewish king who is usurping the current king at the word of Hashem. And from there, you're going to the great Navi Elisha. So you're going in ascending order of greatness, and you would have to assume that a person killed by Elisha is on a different level than a person killed by Hazael. Now you can say it in a different, you can say it two different ways. You can say it really in either direction. You can either say that Hazael kills indiscriminately, where Elisha kills very specifically, so the people Elisha kills are going to be much more guilty. Or you could say the other way around, that a person killed by Elisha didn't deserve to be killed by just some foreign nation attacking, but rather it was a more specific thing by the great Navi Elisha. The way the Navi puts it, again, this is not the way it happened, that the one who escapes Hazael will be killed by Yehu, and the one who escapes Yehu will be killed by Elisha, it seems that it was a zechus, it was a merit to escape Hazael, and then be killed by Yehu. That would be a better way to be killed. And then if they escaped Yehu, that was a zechus, that was a merit, and be killed by Elisha, that was better. Elisha's not killing anybody by the sword, even though it says, the one who escapes the sword of Hazael will be killed by Yehu. The one who escapes the sword of Yehu will be killed by Elisha. Hazael and Yehu kill with the sword. Elisha doesn't kill with the sword. He curses them, the group of people, and they're killed by the bears. That's who kills them. But Elisha's death, or death through Elisha, is a different type of death. It's more of a miraculous type of thing than the sword of Hazael, which would be derech hateva, much more in the normal course of events, as opposed to the words of Elisha. The fact of the matter is, though, that happens in the reverse order. Elisha kills people first, then comes Yehu, then comes Hazael. Hazael's destruction was much greater than the destruction of Yehu, and Yehu's destruction was much greater than that of Elisha, which is what it implies from the original Nevuah. If you're talking about those who escape from Hazael, we're talking about a small group that got away from Hazael. They were killed by Yehu. Those who escaped Yehu, it's an even smaller group, would be killed by Elisha. So Elisha's killings, our destruction, is smaller. The scope is much smaller than the other two, and that's in fact what happened. Elisha only kills 42 people, whereas Yehu kills many more, and Hazael kills even more than that. The fact that it happens in the reverse order seems to indicate that because of the tshuva that the people did, they didn't deserve the intense destruction that would happen under Hazael, or even the less intense destruction that would happen under Yehu. They only deserved, the first ones who deserved destruction were those who cursed Elisha. And then Elisha, those who degraded Elisha, and then Elisha cursed them. Remember, we explained that those people were the manifestation of the karbanos that were brought by Balak. So these people represented the evil of Moab, the evil of Balak, the line of Arpa were represented by these 42 people, and they were killed by Elisha. If the people were doing tshuva, what were they doing tshuva from? They were doing tshuva from this entire description of what we had before of people who were no longer focused on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but focused on themselves, Avodah Zarah. There was the lack of chesed. They were very, very selfish, very, very self-centered. Elisha weeded out these 42 people. In the process of tshuva, as the Jews were doing tshuva, with these 42 people gone, there might have been enough tshuva that everybody else, get rid of these bad apples, now everything else may be able to stop the ultimate destruction that was coming because the 42 people were killed. Now, even though Chazal criticized Elisha for having cursed them, but these 42 people definitely deserve to die. It shouldn't have come through his curse, but they deserve to die. They were bad people. They were the bad apples. By getting rid of them, then it was possible that there would still be a salvation, that there wouldn't be destruction. In the end, Yehu does need to come along and wipe out the house of Ahab along with many, many other people. That might have been enough because people were still holding by tshuva. But when in the end, when that also wasn't enough, then eventually the terrible destruction of Chazal comes along. So it happens in the reverse order because there is a process of tshuva happening, which we'll try to show how that works. There was a process of tshuva happening which delayed the destruction. So first came Elisha's getting rid of the worst of them, the bad apples. Then came then came Yehu getting rid of Ahab's family, etc. And then came Chazal. Now, Eliyahu, we know, was taken away because he insisted that the Jews need to be punished. That's what he insisted, that they don't deserve to be saved, they need to be punished. Elisha asks Eliyahu for Pishnai Beruchacha. He wants double the spirit of Eliyahu HaNavi. What is the significance of that? Now let's think for a moment. Eliyahu HaNavi performs open miracles, nisim geluyim, open miracles. Even though we have many Nevi'im, and we have many miracles that take place throughout Tanakh, most of them are not open miracles. For example, Daniel is thrown into a lion's den and he survives. Is that an open miracle? It's certainly miraculous, but I don't know if we would call it an open miracle. The lions didn't eat him. They were hungry lions, they didn't eat him. But there was no supernatural event that happened. But the miracles that that Eliyahu does are open miracles. Bringing somebody back to life is an open miracle. And the other miracles that Eliyahu does. Elisha asks for double that, an open miracle. Now, what's the difference between a revealed miracle, versus miracles that aren't so obvious? What is the significance of an open miracle?
Well, it's a shame because not everyone be aware of it, as opposed to...
It's true. An open miracle is a time or something that shows the presence of the Shekhinah, shows Hashem's presence in this world. We know that the greatest open miracles that have ever taken place were in and around Yetzias Mitzrayim, with getting out of Egypt. First the plagues, then the plagues were dwarfed by the splitting of the sea, and then that was dwarfed by the giving of the Torah. Those are the greatest open miracles that ever took place. The Ramban writes in Parashas Bo that open miracles are not the ticket to real emunah, to real belief in Hashem. Open miracles are something that give you a one-time glimpse into the fact that there is Hashem, but those things wear off very quickly, as we see evidence of that in the Chumash, that the Jewish people were not able to stay on the straight and narrow all the time, even though they had witnessed incredible miracles, because it wears off very quickly. And we have evidence here in the Navi, after the great miracle in Har HaKarmel, as we mentioned last week, after that face-off between Eliyahu and the Nevi'e HaBaal, after that, Ezebel says to Eliyahu, don't worry about it, tomorrow I'll get you, because it's going to wear off. The miracle, unless you do something to internalize what you've seen and to grow from what you've seen, it wears off very, very quickly. But the miracle at the moment announces the presence of Hashem. It announces that there is a God in the world. That's what it announces. So Eliyahu performs open miracles more than you see with other prophets. Elisha says, I want double. Now what was he asking for? Does he just want to be famous? Like, what does he mean, I want double? Why does he want double? Elisha's role is taking over for Eliyahu. Eliyahu is being taken away. Why? Because he's insisting that the Jews do not deserve to be saved. They need to be punished. So Elisha is taking over for Eliyahu. So Elisha says, I want my role to be one that can be something that may be able to stop this destruction that's going to happen. When you perform miracles, part of why Eliyahu felt that the Jewish people must be punished is because the miracles didn't work. Look, we took them to Har HaKarmel, and we did this incredible thing where the fire came down from heaven and ate up everything, and all the water and all the, everything was destroyed by the fire. What an unbelievable miracle. Everybody fell on their faces, Hashem Elokim, Hashem Elokim. The next day, it's nothing. It's gone. There's a price on my head. So Eliyahu says, obviously, the miracles aren't working. So then what will work to bring the Jews back? The only thing you can do is punish. That's all there can be. So Hashem says to Eliyahu, you need to leave the world. So Elisha is going to take over. So Elisha's job is to bring the Jews to tshuva. So Elisha says, I want to be able to do double what you did. Because maybe if we kill him with kindness, we do even more than what you did. That will bring the tshuva. That will make them come back. That then it'll be even more. We're not going to do the Har HaKarmel thing again, but perhaps these open miracles will show the presence of Hashem enough that people will internalize it, and it will not be necessary to have a destruction. There will be a tshuva that will prevent the destruction. So he asks for double. Eliyahu says it's a very tough thing you asked for. Now, what makes that a tough thing? What does that mean? Eliyahu is not the one giving it. Hashem is the one giving it. Hashem can do anything. So what's tough about it? What's tough about it is that the Hashem told Eliyahu, you're going to be removed, and I'm going to bring destruction. He already said. He said Chazal is going to kill people, and Yehu is going to kill people, and Elisha is going to kill people. So it's in the cards already. It's happening. So you can do your best, but you're asking to try to reverse what's already been decreed. When I was doing it, nothing was decreed yet. There is a decree in motion right now to destroy, and you want to reverse it. You're trying to turn the tide. That's very tough. So Eliyahu says to him, okay, here's the deal. If you see me being taken away, then you'll get double. But if you don't see me, you won't. What's so important about seeing Eliyahu being taken away? Either Hashem's going to decide to give Elisha that role, or he's not going to give him that role. What's the point about seeing Eliyahu being taken away? So I want to look at the story again where Eliyahu is taken away. We know that they're walking together, and it's in Malachim Beis. It's in Perek Beis. Chapter 2, Pasuk Tes, verse 9, is where he asks for his, this is what he asks for Pishtam, he asks for double. Pasuk Tes, verse 9. Vayicha Avram, after they cross the Yarden, Velio Amar El Elisha, Shal Moes Elach, ask what you want me to do for you, B'term El Akach Meimach, before I'm taken from you. Vayimar Elisha, Vihina Pishnaim Beruchacha Eloi, I would like double your spirit in me. Vayomer hikshisa lishol, you asked for a very difficult thing. Im tira osi lukach me'itach, if you see me being taken from you, yilach kain, you'll have it. V'imayin lo yeh, but if not, you won't have it. Vayihem aholchem haloch v'daber, they're going and speaking. V'inei rechev esh v'susei esh, then there's a chariot of fire and horses of fire. V'yafridu bein shneim, it separated between them. V'yal Eliyahu b'sara shamayim, and Eliyahu went up in the tempest up to the heavens. V'elisha roeh, Elisha sees. He sees. That means he's going to get pishtaim. He's going to get double. V'hu mitzayek, and he's crying out, Avi, Avi, Rechev Yisrael Ufar Hashav. My father, my father, the chariot of the Jews and its horsemen, right? V'lara, oh, he didn't see him again. V'yechazek b'vgadav, he took hold of his clothing. V'yikra'em l'shtaim crying, he tore them into two parts. Then Vayara Mesaderes Eliyahu, he took the cloak of Eliyahu, Ashanafla Me'olav, had fallen from him, and then he went back to the Yarden. Okay, so he saw him go. Now I ask you, Eliyahu Anavi is being taken, why? Because he's insisting that what the Jews need right now is tough love. That's what they need. They need to be punished. That's why he's being taken away. And Elisha is taking over. So Eliyahu is going to leave this world. Now, he's not killed. He leaves. But how does he leave? This chariot of fire comes down from the heavens. It doesn't say that. It just says that there was a chariot of fire and horses of fire. And Eliyahu goes up in the tempest to the heavens. Would you characterize that as a as an honorable exit or a dishonorable exit?
Kind of dishonorable.
Why?
There's no closure of anything. He just disappeared. He left.
So is it dishonorable?
Gave the choice of honorable or dishonorable. Dishonorable.
It's like a miracle in itself. You know, he goes, the chariot appears. It's like nothing worldly. And
he left the hole.
Oh, wait, there's that story where the angel gives the coal, right? And it purifies the person. So if this is a chariot and horses, and he goes with it, he could be purified, right? Isn't that what happened?
It doesn't say he did anything wrong. So he can't purify over there. That story is where a person, the Navi said that he did something wrong.
Well, he did something wrong that he doesn't stay on earth to be their Navi, right?
Not necessarily.
Not necessarily.
His opinion wasn't wrong?
I don't know. All I know is that a chariot of fire and horses of fire whisking the person away into the heavens, to me, is a pretty unbelievable thing. Like, it doesn't sound to me like, you know, like he's being slapped on the wrist. Right.
Sounds pretty awesome. Yeah.
Right. It sounds like a pretty unbelievable thing. Now, we know he's still around. He's still here. He's still alive. So Eliyahu HaNavi is not, I wouldn't call this a dishonorable discharge. I'd call it an honorable discharge. I mean, he was whisked off into heaven, alive. We also know that Eliyahu HaNavi is the herald of Mashiach. He's going to come before Mashiach comes to tell us Mashiach is going to come. The halacha is the Gemara in Erevin says that Mashiach cannot come on Shabbos. The reason why Mashiach cannot come on Shabbos is because in order for Mashiach to come on Shabbos, Eliyahu has to come the day before Shabbos to tell us that Mashiach is coming. Because he comes, this is what the Gemara says, that Eliyahu comes the day before Mashiach comes. So the Gemara says, if Eliyahu HaNavi would come to this world openly, then we'd all have to drop whatever we're doing and go and be Mekabel Panav and go give him honor. Because Eliyahu HaNavi would be the greatest Navi, greatest spiritual person, greatest spirituality that we've had in this world in centuries to be here, in thousands of years. For him to be here among us, so we'd have to go. Everybody, every single Jew would have to drop whatever they're doing and go greet him.
And not make Shabbos.
That's what Gemara says. So who's going to make Shabbos? So therefore, that's why Mashiach can't come on Shabbos. That's what Gemara says. The Gemara in Erevin says that. The Gemara says. So then, how could Mashiach come on Friday? What about the same? When we have the same problem? Because
yeah.
Mashiach is even greater than Eliyahu HaNavi. So Gemara says, no. Once Mashiach comes, then the non-Jews will make Shabbos for us. But Eliyahu, that's not going to happen yet, because it won't be before Mashiach comes. So, what's going to be? So we're dealing with an unbelievable person over here. So, Eliyahu says to Elisha, "If you see me go, then you'll get this special bracha." Why is that? So, what does Elisha say when Eliyahu goes? He says, it says in Pasuk Yud Beis, verse 12, Elisha Roa, Elisha sees, Vumitzayik, and he was crying out, Avi, Avi, my father, my father. The Gemara brings a proof from here that a Rebbe is called a father, and that Talmidim are called children. My father, my father. Rechav Yisrael Ufarashav, the chariot of the Jews and its horses. So the Targum says, and Rashi brings it over here, Ditav lahon li Yisrael bitzluse. You, Eliyahu, my father, you are better for the Jews with your davening, merisichin uparashin, than chariots and horses. You protected the Jews with your tefilos more than armies of chariots and horses. You were the father of the Jewish people. You took care of the Jewish people. You cared about the Jewish people. You see, it's true Eliyahu HaNavi is asking for a tough stance that Hashem should take with the Jewish people. But it's not because he doesn't love the Jewish people. Eliyahu loves the Jewish people. Eliyahu acts like a father to the Jewish people. Eliyahu protects the Jewish people. But Eliyahu wants the best for the Jewish people. And if they're not responding to miracles and kindness, then Eliyahu says, there is no choice over here. It's going to have to be tough love. But it's still love. It's not out of anger or spite or just punitive ways of dealing with the people. It is out of love for the Jewish people that Eliyahu wants this. Hashem still removes Eliyahu from the world. But not because he's not going to do what Eliyahu said. He is going to do what Eliyahu said. But you need someone else now who's going to shepherd the Jewish people. And Elisha takes over. But by seeing Eliyahu removed in this way, essentially what's happening is that rather than it being Elisha being a completely different approach to dealing with the Jewish people, Elisha becomes the true heir to Eliyahu. That just as Eliyahu was the father of the people, took care of the people, protected the people, loved the people, Elisha also has that same bracha. And because he's able to see Eliyahu be taken, that is the stamp of approval that Elisha can do this. Just as we find in the negative where Sodom is being destroyed and Lot is not allowed to watch the destruction. Why is he not allowed to watch the destruction? Because he's really not bad, that much better than they are. And to watch people being destroyed implies that the one who's watching is on a different level, is in a different ballpark, is not in the same league as those who are being destroyed. Lot couldn't claim that. And therefore, Lot was not allowed to look. And his wife did look, she was punished. Avraham Avinu was allowed to look. Because Avraham Avinu was in a different plane, different existence. Therefore, he was allowed to see it. He was able to be there. When Eliyahu was taken away, it's the reverse. See, that's with destruction. Here, with Eliyahu being taken away, if Elisha is allowed to see it, that shows that Elisha is close to the level of Eliyahu. Now, he's not on the level of Eliyahu, but he's in the same league. He's able to see it. Lesser people would not be able to see it. Lesser people couldn't be allowed to witness the greatness of Eliyahu's departure from this world. Only someone who is somehow within reach of Eliyahu HaNavi could see Eliyahu's departure. So Eliyahu says to Elisha, if you see me, it's not that if you see me, then I'll give it to you. I'm not giving it to you anyway. It's not if you see me, then Hashem will now give it to you because now you deserve it. It's not, you're not earning it by seeing me. Seeing me shows, it's a simon, it's symbolic. It shows that you're in my league and then you'll be able to get it. And that's what happens. That's also why he's able to get the Aderes Eliyahu, he's able to get the cloak of Eliyahu. A regular person couldn't handle the cloak of Eliyahu HaNavi. Remember, if people couldn't even walk into the room where Elisha was for fear of talking to Elisha, certainly Eliyahu HaNavi. So to actually handle his cloak, that's not for regular people. But Elisha wasn't a regular person. And therefore, he had the capacity to take over for Eliyahu HaNavi, and that's why he was able to see Eliyahu leave, and he was able to handle the cloak. And therefore, that proved that he would continue with the spiritual greatness of Eliyahu, the open miracles that Eliyahu was able to do. Elisha would be granted that wish. And now he's going to try to stop the destruction. And Elisha does a very good job. It's delayed. It doesn't happen in the order that was supposed to happen. There isn't massive destruction right away. It's much slower. First, the people are killed by Elisha. Then by Yehu, then by Chazal. It's delayed and delayed and delayed and delayed until it finally isn't able to be delayed anymore, and it happens anyway. But there is an element of tshuva that's going on. We even saw this, if you'll go back to the shiur we talked about, when even Yehoram ben Achav, even he, who was really a Rasha, even he was moved to tshuva to a certain extent in Shomron when the women were fighting over that terrible story of who's going to eat whose baby, whose child, right? Even there you see Yehoram was moved to some tshuva. Now, ultimately what was supposed to happen is that just as Eliyahu, just as Elisha was the heir to Eliyahu, Gehazi should have been the heir to Elisha. To get into the exact details of Gehazi's mistakes, we talked about them as we learned them. It's difficult to really get a handle on Gehazi's mistakes and get a big picture of Gehazi, but it certainly is a proof. It's a siman, again, it's symbolic of the fact that the tshuva was not going to last. Gehazi, had he lived up to his potential, perhaps there would have been it would have progressed, that just as Elisha was stemming the tide, perhaps Gehazi would have continued to stem the tide. But Gehazi instead, it's a 180. He ends up losing his chelik in Olam Haba. And there's instead terrible destruction ensues. Yonah does take over. Now Yonah doesn't take over in the way that Eliyahu does or the way that Elisha does. He doesn't perform those sorts of open miracles. But what does Yonah stand for? We know the famous story of Yonah ben Amittai in Nineveh. And what does Yonah represent more than anything else? Tshuva and love for the Jewish people. Yonah represents that unwavering love for the Jewish people to the point where he doesn't want to listen to Hashem's word. He's a Navi. He's not a regular person. He's a person, remember, a Navi is someone, we've said this many times, who is not Masiach Das, who does not stop thinking about Hashem ever. 24/7, he's thinking about Hashem. That's the definition of a Navi. So we're talking about someone who is very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But Yonah doesn't want to listen to Hashem because he understands that that will be it will turn out bad for the Jewish people. And Yonah doesn't want to do anything that will bring bad to the Jewish people. This is a complete reversal from Eliyahu Navi, who is insisting on tough love. Yonah is insisting on nothing that will make the Jews look bad. Nothing. There shouldn't be any way of looking bad and representing tshuva. Now Yonah's story with Nineveh, though, comes after much of this destruction. So it's not that it could be that Yonah is just a reaction to that, but he represents really the opposite of what we find with Eliyahu HaNavi. In the end, the pasuk tells us at the end of Malachi. Malachi is the last Navi, the last of the Treyasar. He's the last Navi, and Malachi, which Chazal saying Rashi learns this way, Malachi is Ezra. Malachi, the very last psukim of Malachi say, the famous, famous psukim, we read it on Shabbos HaGadol before Pesach. Hine anochi shaleach lachem eis Eliyahu Navi. Behold, I am sending to you Eliyahu Navi. There's no vav in that, in Eliyahu over there. Lifnei bo yom Hashem HaGadol v'hanora, before the day of Hashem comes, the great and awesome day of Hashem. And then that pasuk of Eheshi Levavos Abanim, Levavanim Alavosam, that he'll return the hearts of the fathers to the sons and the sons to the fathers. And you read it inside, but the rest of it is we repeat that last, the second last pasuk, because the very last words are not so positive, as I'll read to you. He'll return the hearts of the fathers on the sons and the sons on the fathers. Lest I come and strike the world down to complete destruction. So listen carefully. This is Eliyahu Navi who's coming. Eliyahu Navi is going to come before the great day of Hashem, the awesome and great day. And he will return the hearts of fathers to their sons and the hearts of the sons on their fathers. Why? Lest I come, Hashem says, and destroy the world. So ultimately, Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come and prevent destruction. That's what he's going to do. Because that's what he wants. Eliyahu HaNavi doesn't want to see destruction. He wants to prevent destruction. He loves the Jewish people. And he will come in the end and do this. He will be that final step that's necessary in order to prevent destruction. Now, it is unclear what does it mean, the day of Hashem, the great and awesome day of Hashem, before the great and awesome day of Hashem. The Rambam writes in Hilchos Malachim, he writes that when it comes to the future, Mashiach and whatever's going to be in the future, those future days, the end of days, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. We means nobody really knows. He says even Chazal don't really know. When they write about different things, they are saying what appears to be the case based on the psukim, but it is not something that they have a clear transmission from Moshe Rabbeinu about what is going to happen at the end of days. And the Rambam's example of a pasuk that we do not know what it means is this pasuk. Therefore, when the Gemara in Erevin says that this pasuk before the day of Hashem comes is referring to the coming of Mashiach, as I mentioned to you before, and when it says that Eliyahu HaNavi is going to come beforehand, it means the day before Mashiach comes, that is the Gemara in Erevin's explanation for this pasuk. But the Gemara in Shkolim says a different explanation for this pasuk, and says that this pasuk is not talking about the time that Mashiach comes. Rather, it's talking about the great day of judgment in the future, where everything is going to be brought to its final judgment. And before that final judgment in the future, whatever that means, whenever that's going to happen, whatever point in time that is, that's when Eliyahu is going to come and make the hearts of fathers and sons together to prevent destruction. Perhaps both are true. Perhaps both are true. But in the end, Eliyahu HaNavi is going to bring about that last step of the Jewish people that they need to prevent destruction. That's ultimately what is going to happen. But he leaves this world at a point where the only thing that can happen to prevent destruction is destruction. That there needs to be some tough love. Elisha attempts to prevent that from happening and is somewhat successful. Gehazi does not live up to what he needs to live up to. And Yonah becomes the next person in line to deal with the fallout of the destruction. Now, we're not done with Elisha yet. Elisha still is alive. And we'll see later, even after the destructions that happen, Elisha is still going to be performing miracles and doing other things. But this is the stage. The stage here is we've already gone through most of the destructions. We learned about it already. But the stage was set with the departure of Eliyahu HaNavi and Elisha replacing Eliyahu HaNavi. When you trace Eliyahu HaNavi, who shows up for the first time in Navi, when you discover Eliyahu HaNavi, it is with, as you remember, with Chil Beis HaEli rebuilding Yericho and Achav being Mecharef and Megadef, saying terrible things about Hashem, and Eliyahu taking away the rain. Eliyahu HaNavi is tough with the Jewish people from the time you meet him until the time he leaves the world. He's tough with the Jewish people, but it's completely out of love. And in the end, he will bring about that last step to bring the Jews back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In the meantime, though, we are left over here with what we learned about the destruction that happens in the reverse order. First Elisha, and then Yehu, and then Hazael.
Okay. Isn't a parent this whole scenario, because Moshe Rabbeinu had Yeshua and brought him up to the point until he was taken by Kadosh Baruch. The same now with Elisha being able to see Eliyahu going up to Shemayim. Leaving the cloak behind reminds me of a royal garb, royal cloak.
That's right.
It shows in a simon, physical simon, that he was the heir to Eliyahu.
Right, that's correct. But Moshe Rabbeinu dies. Eliyahu does not.
I know.
He's still alive.
I mentioned it last time. I still don't understand why Eliyahu, of all the people in history, didn't really die. Why? Is it because
Because of this bridge. I think because Eliyahu Navi ultimately is the one who needs to bring about Mashiach. And the coming of Mashiach is the very thing that is a variable. Mashiach could have come 1,000 years ago and he can come tomorrow. So it's a variable. So you have Eliyahu who's there and still alive, and any time it can happen. He's around. He's here. And we know Eliyahu sometimes visits this world in a spiritual form, sometimes in a physical form. People have Gilui Eliyahu. It happens.
You hear stories like that. But
you hear stories, but the Gemara speaks about stories about it. The Gemara mentions it. The Gemara talks about Eliyahu Navi talking to various Amoraim who knew they were talking to him. See, the stories we hear is that nobody realized he was Eliyahu Navi, right? And then you don't have to know if the story is really true or not true. You have no idea, right? But the Gemara speaks about people who learned with Eliyahu Navi, who learned with him. And when the Gemara speaks about a particular Amora who behaved in a certain manner, so Eliyahu stopped coming to him. And then he had a tshuva, and Eliyahu came back, and he said, why'd you do that? You know, it's a certain madrega, you reach a certain level, and then you can converse with Eliyahu and Avi. There's a certain level in that. So he's here, he's around. He's not in charge, Hashem is in charge. But he's this sort of angelic but human person. You know, he's a person who has reached a level where he's between the two worlds.
I'm stuck on what you said. He killed the 42 men because he thought that maybe if he got rid of those bad apples, the rest of the Jewish people might have a chance, okay?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if he thought he killed them because they degraded him, but that right. proved that they how bad they were.
All right, but when I think of it, the next step is when Yehu kills off Ahav's family, who I think of as worse than what these 42 did. So am I often thinking did was worse?
We talked about these 42 people. Remember, the 42 people, first of all, they were extremely selfish. They couldn't think of anything but themselves. Even though the water was killing the people of Jericho, they didn't care. And then also that they would degrade, they would make fun of the great Navi, the greatest person on the face of the earth. I mean,
degrade is different than to actively want to kill.
Yeah. I don't know. To show such disrespect.
To me, it seems backwards.
I think the disrespect it shows more. Shows how bad they were.
If you're going to kill someone, I think that shows a great deal of disrespect.
Okay. That's who you're killing. Yeah. Yeah.
At the end, I'm sorry.
Get in their head.
But at the end, it's supposed to be a great war, this Gog and
Magog. Yeah, we don't know about that either. We don't know what that is. The Gemara says that that at one point in history, Hashem was about to make a particular war, Gog and Magog, when Sancherev attacked Chizkiyahu HaMelech. He was going to make Sancherev Gog and Magog, and Chizkiyahu would have been Mashiach. So evidently, you know, there are different ways that could happen also.
But Eliyahu would follow that, whatever that is?
We don't know. That's that's what I'm saying. We don't really know. Okay. We don't know. We have various psukim. They will make sense after it happens. Okay. I imagine that the psukim are deliberately vague because it can happen in various ways. It's not locked into one way only. And there may be an optimal way and a less optimal way, but there are various ways it can happen.
At some point it depends on us and our actions.
It always depends on us. It always depends on us. That's the bottom line. And us means whoever's alive. So right now, we're the ones who it depends on. We're the ones it depends on.
So can I ask about this
the famine in Shomron?
Yes.
Was that only in Shomron?
No, no. But Shomron.
It was the worst in there.
It was. It was more intense over there. That's what we talked about at the time, that it happened. But they were also. There was a siege around Shomron.
Yeah.
So the famine. That's what we talked about. How the famine, the siege, was much worse because of the fact that there had been a famine.
Right.
Or there was in the middle. They were in the middle of a famine.
But the whole country was in famine.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to stop here for the evening a little bit early, and Mitzvah Hashem, next week we're probably we're going to go ahead, most likely.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.